It's the internet. You're busy. Let's do this. Welcome to the Games Beat Decides podcast. This is the podcast where we decide everything about the world of video games so you don't have to think for yourself. I'm your host, Jeffrey Grubb. With me is...
Mike Minotti.
Hooray! So beautiful. Uh-huh. I've been playing a little bit of that since last night, and I can't wait to like play it all weekend. Although I have other games I still want to finish too.
Ooh, what house you pick?
I went with Golden Deer, but I'm still early enough that I feel like I might change it. Yeah, I would, because I mean it seems like the right one. Now you're making me want to defend it. What'd you do? What would you pick?
I went with the Black Eagles.
Okay,
so I think it's going to be a popular choice.
Yeah,
because it has the girl.
Yes, I think so. I was thinking about picking the girl. That was factoring into my decision, and then I'm like, Claude seems pretty cool, but now I regret it just because I think you pick, and then the girl that like is in your head starts talking about it, and she's like, oh, the blue guy, he seems like stoic or whatever and pious, but he's got something dark is lurking underneath. And I'm like, something dark? That sounds interesting. I want that.
You know, everyone has got something dark. I'll tell you, what's interesting is, and it's something I realized because I actually did the US Gamer RPG podcast with Kat Bailey. And
Axe of the Blood God for anyone who wants to check that out.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun stuff. That's going on Monday, but we were talking and it's very clear that the second half of the game changes wildly based on which house you pick. So that's pretty neat. So there's reasons to go back and play them all.
Yeah, I'm hoping just to get through one full playthrough,
right?
And then we'll see.
It's not like that the Fates where you kind of felt like you had to do them all to get like a true ending or something like that,
or even like the true experience. We talked about this a little bit last week, but yeah, it felt like you know you're supposed to do all this because otherwise you're missing so much. I know this one is definitely going to be more like you are taking ownership of your path through this game. And if you want more details, if you want the other side of the story, you can do that. But you don't have to. You could just, you know, choose your side and stick with it.
Yep. So
it's great. Yeah. We'll probably talk a little bit more about Fire Emblem. I'm not sure. We'll see how you're feeling.
We've talked about it a lot. My review is up now. Given 92, so you should check that out. It's very good.
It seems very good from what I've played so far. But we're going to talk about some news. We have some other games to talk about. First, though, I want to thank everybody for joining us. You can get more from me and Mike at gamesbeat.com. If you have something to share with us, you can email the podcast at games+podcast@venturebeat.com. That is the plus sign. Get us on Twitter at GBDecides for the podcast or at GamesBeat for the website itself. If you're listening to this on the website player widget, like in the story itself, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, just about anywhere where pods are caught. If you like the show, rate us on Apple Podcasts or any of those services. It helps people find the show. I want to say thank you to Carlos Ayn, who is Insane in the Rain Music on YouTube, for the use of our theme song. And you could support the show if you would like by going to anchor.fm/gamesbeat-decides. If you go into the show notes on your podcast app, slide over on the album art, you can click on that link. It'll take you right to it.
How come you didn't thank me for my music?
So we're going to keep moving on. And I could tell you've been practicing that one for quite some time.
No,
so.
I just figured it out about an hour ago.
Mm-hmm. No, you definitely have played that for me before. I remember it.
I just figured it out. I swear.
Okay, so maybe you just sang it. You've only ever sung it.
I sang it for you. Remember my lyrics?
I know you've done that, but like years. I know you've sung that for years, though. So maybe I'm conflating these things. I don't have a very good memory anymore.
Maybe I learned it on the tin whistle and then forgot it and learned it again.
I feel like it was on the podcast too, so I wonder if we can go back. We'll see.
You know, because you have to find the evidence because I don't believe you.
Yeah, exactly. So, what have you been playing, Mike?
I mean, really, it was a lot more Fire Emblem, which...
It's a substantial game, right?
It's a big game.
There's a lot there. Yeah.
And I almost feel more intrigued to maybe try out the other two houses than I thought I would. Especially since, like, you know, my real only complaint with the game is that it's a little easy. So I'm kind of tempted to try it on hard mode and see what that's like. And
I started it on hard mode because of you. And I'm like, if I run into a lot of problems, I will just start over. But... I was like, it sounds like there's enough help with all the like time rewinding abilities that I might be able to refine.
There's no weapons triangle, so like the weaknesses aren't nearly as punishing. I think you'll be okay. You play a lot of these kind of tactical games anyways, don't you?
Yeah, I have been playing more recently, actually. So I was like looking at like all the games I've been playing in the last 12 months or so, and there's a few of them on there. I mean, there is Wargroove, and I've actually put a little time into XCOM 2, and then what was the one we were just talking about, that Tiny Metal?
Yeah,
a lot of these games. I'm definitely hoping to get a challenge out of this. So I hope hard mode treats me right. At the same time, I don't want to get frustrated. So we'll see.
Right. That's why I always, like, I never want to, I'm always afraid to start on hard mode. Cause that's
right.
Some games let you go back and forth. At least I don't think Fire Emblem does. I never tried it anyways. I don't think you like go to the settings and change it.
Yeah. Do you have any other stories about Fire Emblem coming up? You're going to tell people like, which house to pick or why?
Part of the fun is just kind of picking your house for whatever like real or arbitrary reason you want to. Like for me, it was just
those starting questions too. Like there's a bunch of questions right at the beginning of the game. Like, does that affect anything? Do you even remember that now after 70 hours or whatever
what
you put in?
What questions are you taught?
She asks like the lady here asks your birthday. It's like she's trying to get your credit card information is what it feels
like. Well, the birthday is because of the calendar system. So when it's literally your birthday, you get a present.
Sure, I'm sure. Yeah, I figured that's what that was. But there was other stuff. It's like,
I know what you're talking about. Before you even pick a house, you almost think you are because they like ask, they just like kind of ask you like, hey, off the record, which one of us do you like?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
I was like, I guess that's it.
That's all I've done so far. So okay, so I haven't picked my house. All right, yeah. So I'm like barely into the game. So
yeah, that's not actually the house picking.
When you pick your house,
they like go much more in the detail about what they're about and what units are in each one, which is nice.
Okay, cool. I'll play it on hard mode probably at least into next week, and then we'll talk about it and see how I'm feeling, and we'll see if I continue down that road.
Cool.
You've also been playing something else, right? What else?
I've been getting back into Overwatch a bit. I've been taking a break for about the last 3 months since the last Hero came out, really. Which I don't know. I was like down on that Hero for some reason. I was just like, this Hero is just a weird mishmash of abilities. He's like a healer with a grenade gun healer, but also a real gun, and this weird thing that keeps everyone alive and barriers. I'm like, this is just everything, and I don't like it. But the new Hero, which is on the PTR, it's just like a new tank kind of character with some like gravity based mechanics, and I think it's a much simpler and cleaner and like good design for the game. I enjoyed playing him a lot. I think that's nice because basically he's going to fill the slot that right now only a Reinhardt and Orisa fill, as that kind of main tank that can just kind of anchor a point and protect everyone around it. So I'm glad there's another one of those. I'm also excited about the roleplay thing coming to the competitive queue, where people like have to queue as DPS healer or tank now.
Right, two of each.
And it's not going to be like a teams are going to fight to figure out what the comp's going to be or whatever. It's just going to be 2-2-2.
Yeah, I mean, they'll still try to figure out what the comps are, but it's for this new thing where it's going to be much more spread out.
There was a period of time for a lot of people, especially like in Overwatch League, were playing this GOATS meta that they called it, where it's literally just three tanks and three healers.
Right.
And it was just kind of, it wasn't very flashy because it was just like about sort of, kind of staying in a place and shooting the other team and trying to kill them before they killed you. Mm-hmm. It was like kind of long and drawn out, but some of the fun stuff that you're usually seeing Widowmakers trying to hit land or headshots and Tracers zipping around and dropping bombs on people. And this was like people hiding behind shields and like shooting other people with their shields. And so this is kind of trying to fix that more than anything.
Yeah, I think it's the right decision. Makes me like, there's been a combination of things that have made me want to get back into Overwatch. I have not, but I keep thinking about it. That was one of them. The new Hero is like, okay, that's interesting. That's always a good reason to go check something out. And then we were at the store and my daughter just picked up these cute little toys, and it's like these little, I don't even know what they're called, but they're like these little round things. And I'm like, wait a second. I look at the label and it's like, oh, Overwatch things. I'm like, I've played
Metroid
that game for so long. I know they look like little tomatoes with faces on them, and they have the green leaves on them. I don't know. Green leaves. Yeah, I have been playing a co-op game of my own. I've been playing some Wolfenstein Youngblood, which is it's the latest entry in this series. But I think people might have had like a sort of misconception that this is like Wolfenstein 3 or like the full next sequel to in the Wolfenstein series. And it's definitely just a standalone expansion, which has become a normal thing. You know, the Far Cry series does it where on some off years we get the Far Cry Blood Dragon or whatever. Or most recently we got the Far Cry one where it takes place way after Far Cry 5 and Primal and all those. And this is in that vein where it's like it is an offshoot. It is not
kind of a standalone expansion, kind of a sequel, but
yeah, but you
more of a standalone expansion.
A standalone expansion in that it that's like the amount of effort they're putting into it, and it's a slightly different sort of gameplay style, which I'll talk about more in a second. But it's not like they're abandoning the main series. It seems like there's still going to be a Wolfenstein 3 that plays exactly like the last two and follows up that story. And this is just sort of a distraction until then. The reason I feel like I have to point that out is because the game is very different. It is not just a story campaign that you are playing through co-op, with your friend the entire time. You are playing co-op. It does very much encourage that. It doesn't just encourage it. It's like that's how you play. When you start the game, it is you are beginning a co-op session, whether you're playing by yourself or not, and you can host a game, and then you could choose who can join you. It's either public or just your friends. I think you could shut that off completely if you want and not let anyone join you, and then you'll just always have the AI partner. But that's not what's happening. That's not what they want here. And the reason for that is it's basically like a light version of Destiny or The Division. It is one of those games. You are running through missions. You are often repeating those missions or going to the same place and doing slightly different alternative missions to collect gear, to collect currency, to upgrade the gear you already have. It's like that. It's not going through like a single solitary campaign. You instead are going to be going back in there a lot. You're not going to just like play with one partner. You're probably going to have like a group of people that you trade off with, and you're like, oh, I'll play through a lot of these missions with you, and then I can just pick up with someone else at any time and not feel like, we're not continuing the same story that I already started with someone else. I think it works. It's still hard to tell because before the game came out, I wasn't able to play a lot of I didn't play any cooperative before the game came out. And I've been in there a little bit, and I got partnered up with someone, and then I had to go deal with a baby's diaper. So I'm going to get in there more this weekend and play a lot more of it. But I think that works. And the reason it works is for I think two big reasons. The upgrade system, which has always been pretty good in the Wolfenstein games, they've really expanded it here. Each weapon has like 8 to 10 things you can work on upgrading. And the upgrade system is very clear. Like you're either upgrading the power or the speed or like how much ammunition it can hold, that sort of thing. And that's satisfying. That like I like working towards that. Especially now, because the other big reason is the game feels really good to play. I loved Wolfenstein the New Colossus. The reasons I loved it were because of the characters and because of the story, because it was building on this mythos and this like family, this like sort of Fast and Furious style family that was you just loved spending time with these characters because they had a great chemistry with one another.
I love that you just compared Wolfenstein to Fast and the Furious.
I think but it totally makes sense in my head. Like that's where they're both going for that similar sort of like a band of characters. Yeah, exactly. Like I could totally see BJ Blazkowicz dropping down a bucket of Coronas.
My God.
Without a doubt. I love the New Colossus for that stuff. It also had really great take on politics and modern politics, especially in America. But this game, this game is going to have a lot less of that. And at the same time, the characters are still very good. The two twin sisters you play as, BJ Blazkowicz's daughters, they're really well written. They're really, really well voice acted. I just don't think they're going to have as many scenes and chances to sort of display that to people. And just taking it as what it is, as a standalone expansion, it's like, this is a different sort of take on the series, and there's no reason it can't work. I wonder if it's like Bethesda and Machine Games did not say exactly that this was what the game was before the game came out. And so there are a lot of people, I think, who are feeling surprised and like, this is not what I come to a Wolfenstein game for, who maybe you could have won them over if you explained it over time. I guess, I don't know. I've never marketed a game before, but it feels like you maybe could have done that and they didn't. And so now I feel like they're starting on the back foot where it's like people are surprised and now they're just kind of like, oh, I don't even want to care about this game. Instead, I'm just going to, you know, get my refund on Steam or whatever and not even think about it.
Would you have rather, like, just not have this kind of a standalone kind of sequel thing and just, like, have, say, Wolfenstein 3 come out a year earlier than normal?
I mean,
it's
if
kind
that's
of a
the
weird question, I guess.
I know. I know what you're going for there. If that's the choice, I mean, I think I would probably still prefer Wolfenstein 3 to come out. But I think the reality of the situation is... you know, they're trying to make as much money as possible. It's not like these Wolfenstein games have been selling super well.
No.
They have a lot of they're really critically praised, and they have a fervent sort of a passionate smaller fan base. And, you know, if you have a passionate small fan base, one of the ways you can maybe monetize them better is to do a game as a service. It's funny that Bethesda was a company that was like, we believe in single player games, save single player games at that Game Awards just a couple of years ago. And now they're doing this stuff. But I mean, it's not like these games aren't fun and it's not like people don't like these kinds of games. And I was going down this road and I kind of got sidetracked, but like, they really did improve the gunplay and the movement and the traversal. Wolfenstein, the new Colossus was a good game, but the weakest part was the shooting. The weakest part was the way it felt to like just move around the world. Like eventually you got these you could choose one of three things to power him up. And it was like, oh, he could make him really small and go under tanks or whatever and go into small places in the wall. Or he can get these stilts and walk around. And even that stuff was like, it was cool, but they really felt like gimmicks. This time you just start with the power armor, you start with a double jump that feels just out of Destiny 2. It feels like and it almost feels as good. And the gunplay almost feels as good as Destiny, which is like, nothing really is as good as the way Destiny feels. But just going in that direction and getting kind of in the same ballpark is impressive. And this game absolutely does that. It feels great to play. Which, you know, to me, that's just more like, oh, I can't wait for this stuff to get transferred into Wolfenstein 3. But in the meantime, I'm not going to say no to this game. I'm enjoying it. And if I can get in there and have a couple good sessions and feel like I'm getting into the loop, then I'll definitely call it a win. But for now, it's like, you know, I'm still in review in progress. We'll have more to talk about it next week. Do you have any interest in this? I know it took a long time for you to get into the Wolfenstein games.
Yeah, I mean, actually,
you seem to like them.
I actually just got copies sent to my house this morning, so I guess I can. Yeah, and it says like, do you know how like what it says? It comes with one buddy pass each. What does that mean?
Right. So the buddy pass, it works like this. Essentially, I'm not sure if it works if you have the base version of the game. I think you might have to have like the deluxe version, which is like maybe $40 instead of $30.
Yeah.
But if you have the buddy pass, you can essentially click on it, get a link or something that you could send to someone else, and it enables them to download the game and play it, and they could play with you. They could play the entire game with you if they want.
But they have to with me.
Yes, they have to play it with you. That's right. And then if they want to like continue their save, they can absolutely just buy the game and then play it with someone else, and all their stuff will transfer over because you're signing into BethesdaNet. And if you want, it's not like it's just a one-time use or one-person use. If that one person is done playing with you or one night they just can't play with you, you just click the button again and it drops them, and you can get another link to send to someone else and continue it with them. And this is apparently it's infinite. It's unlimited. So you could just keep doing this. But the first person wouldn't then be able to just like sign on and keep playing. They would have to get a new buddy pass from you and so on. It's a cool idea. I think it's a really smart thing for this game.
I mean, I'll tell you what, it's ballsy to make like a AAA co-op game. I feel like I'd be scared to make that investment because it seems like it's just such an immediate hurdle for some people.
Yes. I mean, it's been one for me. You can't pause the game because it's one of those. It's one of these games. It's a Destiny Division. You just can't pause those games because they're always online. People can join at any time. Even if you're playing by yourself with AI, with an AI companion, you know, your buddy could theoretically join you. Even if you turn that off, the game still treats it like it's one of those these online environments. And that's hard for someone like me. I've talked about this before. I got young kids. It's hard to play a game where I can't just pause at any moment to go deal with something that is happening in my real world life. And that's like that's before you even start talking about trying to sync up schedules with other people to play. When you have a game like this that has teams where it's like three or four people up to six people, maybe that makes a little bit more sense because then you can have like a Discord where there is a pool of people playing the game that you could choose from at any one night and have them come join you. And then if someone can't make it, it's less pressure on them. But if you start playing this co-op game with someone, I do still think that you're going to feel like responsible for the other person and feel like, oh, I have to keep playing with them because we started down this path. We're going to want to keep playing. I don't think they want you to think of it that way, which is why the buddy pass works the way it does. But it's still, I think when you're just other person, it feels that way.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to be so, I don't know, persistent. I thought it was kind of going to be like a 5-hour co-op campaign that you can maybe, almost kind of like what Gears of War 1 back in the day.
Right.
Like, yeah, this is something you and a friend could play through in like a night if you have a lot of time.
Without a doubt. I think that's what a lot of people were expecting. I thought this was possible. I don't think I've ever like wrote that anywhere or said that anywhere, but I always, when I was watching the previews for the game, even as they were focusing on the story and the trailers or whatever, I was like, I think it's possible that they could be going for one of these games as a service things as an offshoot. It's like, that always feels like something developers are chasing right now. And I don't blame them. But at the same time, I also thought it was equally as possible that it was exactly what you described. But playing it now, I'm not sure. Like, I mean, I might have preferred a 5-hour thing personally, but I think this game has more potential. And I think like this is like a perfect example of why developers make these games as a service things in the first place. Because if you think about it, like, what was the last sort of standalone expansion thing from the Wolfenstein series? It was that one after the New Order. The Old Blood. And, you know, some people were a fan of it and some people weren't, but it came and it went. And I'm sure it made some money, but it felt like, you know, if it was one of these, it left money on the table. Maybe this game gets enough of an audience, lasts for a couple years with, you know, even if it's not like in the top 10 on Steam's most played, if it's in the top 20, that's income that's getting generated on a regular basis while we wait for Wolfenstein 3. I know people say there's a finite amount of time in the day for everyone to be playing these games, but even if it's like a finite audience, a small audience playing this, in the end, it might end up doing significantly better than something like The Old Blood. So I would continue to expect to see more games like this in the future. And then while I was waiting for Dean to get on one night and we couldn't sync up our schedules so we could play Wolfenstein together, which never actually happened. I'm still going to try to make it happen, but it never actually happened. I started a game called 1980X, or it's like 198X.
I've heard about this. 1980X. I don't know much about it.
What have you heard? Yeah, like, because
it's a game.
Yeah, okay, exactly. That's what I heard too. And I heard like one person, I saw one tweet where people were like, oh, this is one of my favorite games of the year. So I started it, and it was kind of what I expected, a beat 'em up, a sort of Streets of Rage clone. And it even has like Yuzo Koshiro music in it. Like, Yuzo Koshiro is one of the credited composers. Excuse me. But then I actually kept playing, got to the end of the first beat 'em up level, and you're still fighting. And then suddenly, like, the camera starts panning up towards the city, the pixelated city in the background, and you're still controlling this character, but the character is like completely off camera at this point. And then it just fades into this boy sitting in his room, and he starts talking about how, you know, in the 80s, and he used to like hang out with his parents and do stuff, but now he's a teenager and he's like looking for where he belongs in the world. And he started walking the streets and he found this arcade, and it was this magical experience. And he goes up to another arcade machine, and then suddenly you're playing a shooter, a shoot 'em up game, shmup. And it was like, okay, what is this, a game where it's like just like an anthology of like different games that like come out of 80s arcades? And it absolutely is that.
Ooh,
it is.
That kind of sounds great.
Yes, it's the spiritual successor to that retro. I can't remember the exact name, but it's the DS game where you are going, Retro Game Challenge is what it is.
Okay, yeah.
And that game was like this narrative thing where you're a boy, actually you get sent back in time to when you were a boy, and you're sitting at an NES and then a Super Nintendo, and you're playing all these sort of, these idealized versions of real games that existed, and as they progress through time, so you're starting with like a really basic like shooter, like a Defender, and then you start playing like a Dragon Quest clone, and it does it works the exact same way, but it was like much more cute and chibi, and this one is very much like moody and American and about arcades, and it's you know it the voiceover that the character does when the boy is like doing his inner monologue, it's very hokey and sort of cheesy, but it's working for me. It's like this synth soundtrack behind him while he talks about like how cool the people in the arcade were and how the arcade definitely wasn't for kids. And it's a lot. And I think it might rub some people the wrong way, but for me, I'm like, I'm just going to accept this for what it is. And it is hokey. And I'm okay with that. There's like, I love some cheese sometimes. And this is it, totally okay that it's doing this. Can't wait to see what the next game is. So I've been trying not to just play that because I want to keep playing Wolfenstein. But 1980X, it's definitely like, so far, it gets a big recommendation for me. It's definitely very cool.
Gotta check that out.
Yep. A few other things here or there, but nothing else that I'm probably going to talk about this week. Yes. Okay. So you okay to get to the news?
Let's do it.
I don't think you can actually hear the beeps, can you? I did the news.
I don't hear no beeps, but that's okay. I can imagine them just fine.
Thank you. All right. So, not a ton of news this week. Again, still slow, but a few big stories, and we'll start with like we did last week, Nintendo. So Nintendo's been dealing with this Joy-Con drift issue, and I think we did talk about it a little bit last week, and I think I said that wasn't Nintendo already dealing with this by fixing it for people. They were, but it turns out, I think they were charging people if you were out of warranty. Now it sounds like, according to a Vice story where they got an internal memo from Nintendo, they've told customer service representatives that represent Nintendo and talk to customers that if someone says they have a broken Joy-Con that drifts, first of all, believe them and then fix it for free. Even if they're completely out of warranty and they've been out of warranty for months and months, we're just going to start fixing it for free. The obvious push here to make this happen was a story that a law firm was considering a class action lawsuit. So now Nintendo is completely covering their ass and just going to do everything they can to fix this. I think your brother might have called it a mini Red Ring of Death, or on Twitter. Was
yeah,
that you?
Yeah,
it definitely feels like that. It's not going to be nearly as expensive. But it sounds like, you know, Nintendo, when threatened with legal action, doing the right thing.
That's all it takes.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
That's it. How much money did Microsoft lose because of the Red Ring of Death? I wonder about that.
I think you can read a book by an author. I think his name is Dean Takahashi. I think he the figure that he got was $1 billion, dollar write off or something like that. So significant, a lot of money.
That is obviously not going to be that bad. And ultimately the controller and not the system, at least.
Right. You know, and it's not like this was a thing where it's like, I think once they discovered it early on, I think they were able to fix the issue in manufacturing pretty early. So a lot of Joy-Cons since then haven't had this issue, is my understanding at least. So it's not like with the Xbox 360 where they were struggling to even diagnose the problem and stop it from happening for years.
Like I say, it's a good thing that they have those GameCube color ones coming out anyways. I'm just gonna get this.
Yeah. You did say that you do have drift issues, right?
Yeah, although it stopped recently. It started like months ago, and it was still going on into towards the beginning of Fire Emblem for me, and then it stopped like a couple weeks ago, and I haven't had it since. So who knows? Maybe it'll come back again. I don't know.
Yeah, I've got the I got the Hori one on my left side. So if I have it on the right side, it's not like the one where I'm moving the character a lot. So I haven't noticed it. I did play a lot of Splatoon 2 though recently, and it was.
Oh, you're doing that Splatfest?
I did the Splatfest. That was good. I'm really looking forward to Splatoon 3 now.
Is it true that Marina lost?
Yeah.
Monsters.
But it's not. Look, it's not my fault. Like, I absolutely went with Pearl. And I would have gone Marina. If the choice was Marina or Pearl, of course I go with Marina.
You have to infer the choice.
But it's not jerk. Like, but it's chaos versus order. And Marina's like, yes, I'm a cop. I'm order. I'm not going to go with the cops.
Oh my God.
Chaos, 100%. And we beat their ass.
You got played by the man into thinking you were making a cool, hip decision. And all you
No, we're making the right decision. No way. Like, there's like
now we got Marina.
Oh,
now we're going to have Pearl.
Hang on.
And
you
the
keep
next
talking,
game, we have to save Marina.
What is this? Splatoon 2 Chaos versus Order. There was like a weird like explanation for this. I'm going to go to the Inkopedia and see if they have a good explanation for... Okay.
Inkopedia, Jesus.
Inkopedia, yeah. I wish they... Of course. It was just a thing right here where they just explained it. But like Chaos and Order, like the way that they described them was just out there. Okay, no, this is not it. Let me look one more time, see if I can find a good explanation. Maybe Destructoid's got my back.
Oh my God. I don't care. You don't understand. I don't care what the explanation could be. It's not about Chaos and Order. It was about Marina and Pearl. And you monsters.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to find it. Damn it. All right. There was no way I was ever going to order. Yeah.
Wow.
It's just... the way it has to be. So then I guess this is going to carry over into Splatoon 3. At least that's been the big implication.
Well, that's
so,
how it worked in the last one. Although,
okay. I just don't remember what the last Splatfest was.
So in the last one, it was literally picking between those two Squid Girls. I can't remember their name.
Right.
And then like the one who lost was the one that like wasn't initially in Splatoon 2. Like that was the one I think you were trying to save or something in the Splatoon 2 campaign. So it's not like Marina will, you know, who knows what they're going to do this time. But
well,
there will probably be some implication is what people are assuming.
Yeah, so it doesn't sound like they're going to, like, I think the people that are going to host the show in Splatoon 3 still going to be Pearl and Marina. Because, like, they teased, it's time that we break. And then Marina's like, no, we can't break up. And then Pearl says something else. And it was like this joke that she was like teasing that they were going to break up. But they're not going to break up. They're just going to keep going. Maybe that just means like, oh, they're going to keep going in Splatoon 2.
I don't know. I feel like there has to be a new team in Splatoon 3. Now we had the new team in 2.
Yeah, I know. They're so popular. I wouldn't be surprised if
popular.
They just brought them back. And
well, you can bring it back in a different capacity.
No, you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if they just kept doing
exactly. I wonder what Splatoon 2 kind of... was able to get away with being pretty similar to Splatoon 1 because it was like, this is on the Switch. I wonder what a Splatoon 3 would do.
Yeah. I mean, if it was like a Call of Duty sequel where there was a significantly different setting, a lot of new maps, a lot of new weapons, a new gizmo or a new sort of...
it's another new campaign because the campaigns are great.
Oh, yeah. New campaign for sure. Yeah. And then a new twist on the gameplay or something. Maybe, I don't know, maybe there's like a new class system where you choose a different sort of squid
so
that does a specific
thing.
Yeah, I think you might be right, but I mean, these are all just possibilities that could work. I feel like they need to do something along those lines at least to really make it feel like a whole sequel at this point.
Right. But it is weird that we're at this point now where we're expecting sequels to games that already came out on the Switch now.
Yes, we are for sure. I mean, 2 years of support, 2 solid years of support for Splatoon 2. It was really well done. I definitely felt like at the end of that thing, I wish I would have played it more. I just didn't pick it up again
too.
Much after the first one.
Because even when that came out, it was like everyone was still kind of playing Breath of the Wild, and then Mario came out not super long after that. And, like, Splatoon 2 was right in the middle of them. And I played it, and I liked it a lot.
Same,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it was also like, you know, Nintendo Online stuff is still a barrier.
Yes, for sure. And, you know, that hasn't changed, but... I was just going there by myself, not even thinking about that Nintendo mobile app or whatever, and having a great time. It's still a really good game. It's one where it's like, I will keep playing it now, even though the Splatfests are over, because just the core game is still just really good.
No one's using like Nintendo's mobile app for voice chat.
No,
are
of
they?
Course not. No,
they have to be look. They have to see those numbers and be like, oh, this isn't working. We need to just put voice in this, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hope so, but like. So remember how Super Mario Maker 1 eventually got that like booklet system where you could go online and find levels and then share people a link to a website, and then people could click on a button there and it would add it to their sort of list once they got into the game. Well, Super Mario Maker 2 doesn't have that, and people think it's because Nintendo's going to update the app with a similar thing.
Oh, no.
So you share things within the app instead of just going to a useful website. I really hope they don't do that. But I think they're going to do it. Yes, it was, man. Remember that video we did where we just like complained about it for 20 solid minutes? Yeah, my opinion has not changed.
Yeah, it's been off. It's almost been worse than I expected. It's almost been. I forget it exists until I remember something like Splatoon 2. I'm like, oh yeah, because like, I mean, I know Smash Bros. Had some kind of portal for it, but I don't think anyone ever used it. I don't know. It's terrible. Yep.
I love that game, but yeah, the whole internet thing with Nintendo is still just really rough. And I mean, I've accepted it, but I'm not excusing it. But I've accepted it. I'm like, I'm just gonna keep playing these games that I like and try not to think about all these things that make me really frustrated and mad about Nintendo. Even though it's totally fair to be frustrated and mad at them.
Yeah. Well, what else we got? What else we got?
You know, we talked about a little bit that new Overwatch hero. He doesn't have shoes. Is my big thing.
That's my big understanding, the shoe thing, which like one looked weird, and then they tried to explain it, and it was kind of coming off as kind of a
ableist.
It seemed ableist, didn't it?
Yeah. So
it's like, oh, it's a fun, cool design thing when people are crazy.
Mm-hmm. He's from the Nut House, basically, is what the short version, right?
People in institutions like wear socks. I didn't get that either. Is that a thing? Maybe they don't have socks because they can hurt themselves with it. Is that what they're trying to say? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. But even if I did know, it feels like one of those things where it's like, maybe that's not the source. Maybe that shouldn't be the inspiration for our character. I don't want to be like too sensitive here. I haven't talked to anyone who's been in a mental institution to see how they feel about it. But, you know, at first it was just like, man, those feet are long and weird and his toes are super defined and graphics got really good and we're using them for these toes here. And that's okay. And then it's like, oh, he's supposed to kind of look like he's kind of wrapped up in a straitjacket almost. And I've definitely remember seeing images like that before in pop culture or whatever of the mental patient who is in a straitjacket and doesn't have shoes on in the padded room. It doesn't even have socks because maybe they'll find a way to hurt themselves with the socks or whatever. But I don't know. It does feel a little bit like, ooh, that's a tough rope to walk anyhow. And maybe the straitjacket is just like this sort of thing from our past that doesn't actually have a lot of usefulness when it comes to treating people who have, mental disabilities.
Let alone a magic future Overwatch world. And it's just weird he doesn't have, I don't want to see his feet, you know, I just don't.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
the character is really cool and, I like a lot about it, but not the feet thing.
Yeah. I'll definitely give him a shot when I play it. It's not like, I don't think we need to boycott the game, but I think it's worthy of the criticism that it does feel like the way they explained it was like, oh, I don't like that actually. So we'll see if they, I mean, and this has happened with Overwatch before, with Blizzard explaining characters and it coming across pretty, pretty weird.
God, how long ago was that controversy with Tracer's pose? That seems like forever ago.
Yeah, and then
the Tracer pose.
Yeah, the butt pose, and she had to like butt it was pose. It was she had two legs down, and then she lifted up one leg, and that's how they fixed it. And then there was the Native American costume for
Pharah. Yeah, that's still a thing.
That sort of ethnic tourism that is not wonderful either. So I mean, the stuff looks cool. And I get why you do it when you're trying to sell something. But it feels like maybe just actually do that as a full-blown character with where it's not just like, oh, this character is interchangeable as I believe she's like from India or Pakistan. I can't remember exactly.
Her mom's from somewhere, I think like Egypt or something like that. And then I think they like retro. I don't know if it was just we didn't know or they retro added it that her father is Canadian. And it was supposed to be like Canadian Native American,
right?
That's what they were saying, which, you know, okay,
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's all just kind of, yeah, it's just complicated stuff and it's hard to pull off, so you have to have the plan from the beginning and sort of know what you're saying, so yeah, tough to pull off. Other stories. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is apparently significantly ahead of what analysts were predicting. I remember Matt Piscitello was like, I have no idea how this game is gonna perform. Matt's from the MPD group, which tracks sales in the United States. He's like, it could be 10 million plus or minus 10 million. Like, he has no idea. And there was another one, I think his name's Benji something. And he said, I was expecting like pretty good sales, but it's way ahead and it might end up being the third fastest selling Switch game so far of 2019.
Wow.
Behind Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe at number two. And number one was, let me see here. Mario Maker 2. That's right. Yes. Which is number one. And so, yeah, it seems like it's going to be a big hit. I guess you were wrong, Mike, for saying it sucks and you hate it.
I did say it sucks. My score is pretty close to the average, I think, which for very wrong reasons, I always am like, ooh, look, my review score is closer than Metacritic. I must have been right.
Yep. Yeah. That's hard to break that. But yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, I think it was, you even said it when we talked about it, when you were talking about it in sort of a review capacity, that it was going to be a hit for, I asked, like, you think this is going to be a hit for Nintendo? Is it going to work? And you're like, yeah, absolutely. So it seems like it's doing even better than pretty much anyone anticipated. I will probably get a lot more sort of Marvel partnerships for all publishers going forward. And I bet Nintendo will want to be in on that.
Yeah. It's interesting how, I wonder if this is going to open the door to more kind of Switch exclusives that aren't just like the super well-known Nintendo properties.
Right. Yeah, you wonder, like, who needs to act to make that happen? Do more companies need to go to Nintendo and say, hey, let's make this happen? Or is it going to be on Nintendo to say, oh, what's possible out there? What can we make happen? I feel like if it's on Nintendo, Nintendo's going to, like, make some deals here or there, like this one. But it's not going to sort of put a huge effort behind it. It might do one of these a year, it feels like. But if it's like, if Nintendo's like, no, come knock on our door, I bet it'll happen pretty quickly and there'll be a lot of these. So who knows?
Interesting.
Yeah. Just a couple more stories. EA Access was exclusive to Xbox One for a long time. PC got Origin Access and then Origin Access Premier, which is EA's like full on Netflix of games. Now EA Access, the base version for $5 a month is on PlayStation 4. Just launched yesterday. The timing of it, of course, is about Madden, which launches in about a week on August 2nd. But if you go in now, I think if you go to the PlayStation 4 now and get EA Access and you subscribe for $5 a month or $30 a year, you could start playing the early trial version of Madden for 10 hours straight right now. It seems like this is like the thing that EA was really struggling to make happen for a very long time. I know I heard something from EA that they were trying to get it out before Anthem, and that obviously didn't happen. But this, you know, before Madden, that's the other part, one of the big ones, at least in the United States, where it should make a big difference. Have you ever subscribed to EA Access?
No, I have not. I mean, you know, we get enough of the games I probably care about for review, and beside that, I'm not really much for Madden or, you know, sports games. So I know not much for me there.
Right. I know you like the show, but like nothing.
I like the show, sports. But even that, I mean, I don't want to say I'm sick of it, but
every couple
like
of
the,
years
the show, know. The one that I was like really like falling in love with was like MLB The Show 07 or 08. So it's okay. Been a while there.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. I've subscribed to EA Access here and there, and it's been, you know, I use it sometimes because we don't like, we'll get like a couple copies for the sports games, but I don't like feel like reviewing them, and so I'm not going to ask for them, ask for a code from EA to like, oh, so just so I can have this game, I just want to have it. So instead, like, it's like nice to have this and like get sort of sports games a little. I mean, it's later, at least on the Xbox. But eventually I'll get them and I could dip into them for a couple hours like I would even if I like bought it. So that it's been nice for that, but I haven't maintained like a solid subscription. I did consider doing the Origin Access Premier on PC when Madden came out last year to like get it early and not have to pay the full price and play it on PC and see what it was like. Even that, I'm like, there's too many other things that I actually am getting codes for that I'm going to be playing. And I do have a subscription now to Game Pass. It's like this, it's a good deal for people who like sports games, without a doubt. And then if you like the few other games that EA is releasing like per year, then yeah, absolutely. But other than that, at this point, it's like, I'm okay. Last story. So today, I guess they're doing QuakeCon right now. Bethesda is. And they announced kind of out of nowhere, all the classic Doom games are coming to the consoles. So like Doom, Doom 2, and Doom 3 have all just hit the Switch and PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. But the thing with the Xbox One is weird because due to backwards compatibility, all those games were already on Xbox One. You would just buy the Xbox 360 versions. The issue there is that they have apparently removed those games from the store, so you can no longer buy the old Xbox 360 versions. You instead need to buy these new ones. It gets even more complicated because, like, Doom, Doom 2, and then Doom 3, like, many of these games had, like, multiplayer features and multiplayer modes that worked well on the Xbox 360 and continued to work on Xbox One. And now these new re-releases don't have some of those features. So it's like they have removed... It comes across as they have removed features and are telling people to buy the game, again, or a separate game. I'm not sure if you can re-download it. I'll have to, like, look into that. But it seems like... It just seems like this weird thing that, like, these are really old games, and I get the impulse to want to, like, remove other ways to buy the games because you're trying to sell them again. But maybe just don't do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, this is obviously... I think this is really neat for Switch, but this Xbox thing where these games were available, and... It's bizarre. I think it's a thing we're going to see more of, where, like, weird, old, backward compatibility versions of games are going to be available, but, like, we have, like, a newer release of them, and...
Right.
People are going to be like, which one? We can't have both of these on the store. That's confusing people. And then, yeah.
And companies, companies have come... They've grown accustomed to re-releasing games and making money from that. Like, they've, you know, it's something they've been trained to say, oh, we can do this in a couple years, release the HD version, and then, you know, release a remaster years later and stuff like that. And to get to a point where it's like, oh no, these games just always work now forever. And so most people aren't going to need to buy the game again. It seems like it's going to cause problems like this. And I kind of assumed that publishers like Bethesda would just be smart enough to be like, okay, we're going to have to change with the times. If we want to re-release these things, we're going to have to do it in a bigger and better way. And do it in a way where even when we leave up the backwards compatible versions, many people will still want to come buy these versions because they, you know, it's a good collection or something with a lot of extra features where you can learn about the Doom series or whatever. This feels like the exact wrong way of doing it. So hopefully they kind of undo this decision to pull those old games and just sort of find a way to let them live in harmony with one another.
On another note, I am kind of interested to, like, maybe play these games on the Switch. I mean,
yeah,
like, I played Doom 1 like everyone did, but I, like, never, like, beat Doom. I didn't play nearly as much as Doom 2. I barely touched Doom 3. Doom 3 Same. Especially, I'm like, man, because that was Doom trying to go in such a different direction than it is right now. What's it like going back to that one?
Yeah, I was getting the same urge when I saw someone playing it on the Switch. It was like in a tweet to announce it was coming out. I'm like, man, I could maybe go back to those games right now and just, like, dive into there, especially with the excitement I have for the new Doom coming out, Doom Eternal. I'm
like, How long can Doom be?
Yeah, exactly. And then I hope they also release Doom 64.
Which I was, like, just thinking that, like, weird, well, especially on Switch.
Yeah, it's like this weird remake of the first Doom, and it's got, I think it's like, that's the one where, like, the ending has spawned the universal Doom theory, where, like, every Doom is in the same universe and they're all sequels to one another, and people have found this, like, really elaborate way to tie them together. And I'm like, okay, I need to go see that for myself. So I hope they figure out a way to do that too.
Yeah. I didn't barely play Doom 64 either. I would just like to have all those. It's not like a collection, though. You have to literally buy each one of these, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah. They're individual... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it just seems the wrong way to do it.
Man, I miss, like... Remember the Namco Museum collections on the PlayStation 1?
Yeah, they've started doing that on the Switch. Like, there's a good number of those. I think there's a Konami one. There's the SNK one. The Sega Genesis one.
I guess I meant more just, like, the presentation was so cool for that. It was like you're literally walking around a museum. Right. And there's all these bonus features. Like, even when we do have a collection, like, even like the Castlevania one, the Mega Man ones recently, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of interesting extras anymore.
Right.
Kind of like an interesting presentation to it.
Yeah, there's I feel like the Mega Man one was pretty decent, right? Wasn't the Mega Man
one? The first one was. I even liked the Legacy Collection more, the one that came out in, like, the PlayStation 2 era.
Right, okay.
Like, I thought that had a neater presence. Like, you're actually a Mega Man walking around, like, a 2D area picking the games. I don't know. Now, the quality of, like, the emulation was fantastic on the Mega Man one.
Right.
And that's been good on quite a few of these. I guess I just mean sort of the presentation of it.
No other stories for news this week. Folders are now in Discord. I didn't want to, like, actually talk about that, but hey, if you got a lot of Discord servers that you're in, go put them in folders. You just drag and drop them on top of one another, and it's very useful. I've made a couple folders already, and it's much more easy to navigate now, so definitely do that. Anything else, Mike? Anything else we should talk about before we get out of here?
Nah, that's it.
Yeah, alright. I'm looking forward to the weekend. I want to just, like, I don't know, decompress. I'm going to go into, like, a chamber where I could just put my ears underwater in complete darkness. And a sensory deprivation chamber is what I'm thinking of. That's what I want to do all weekend long, Mike. How about you? What do you got planned?
My nephew has his first birthday party on Sunday, so obviously I'm going to rage. Get real sloppy and drunk. It'll be great.
That's perfect. I mean, that's what an uncle's supposed to do. So
it starts at 10 a.m., so the perfect time.
Yeah, absolutely. Alright, why don't you tell everybody where they could find you on the internet?
Tolkoto at Twitter, TOLKOTO. It's Bloody Barrel Podcasts every week, and then new episode of 90s Disney should be coming out on the 1st. That'll be about Tower of Terror and Sunset Boulevard, so fun stuff.
I'm in the middle of listening to the Aladdin one right now. Ooh. I was listening to it this morning. I was always one of those people that never really played either one, so I just said I like the Super Nintendo version to make people like you mad.
It would work.
Yeah. Yeah. I am Jeff Grubb on Twitter and also on Twitch. And you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/Jeffrey Grubb. Yeah. We'll be back next week. Like I said, I'll have more to talk about with Wolfenstein, more to talk about with Fire Emblem, just to see how hard mode's going. Until then, everybody have a good one, and we'll see you then.
Bye.